May I tell you how happy I am to see you here tonight? And we have just about a full house. And, you know, that's pretty exciting to a preacher. And I'm really happy that you have come tonight to be part of this, part of our assembly. We're doing this meeting in a little more casual way. I'm standing on the floor instead of behind the pulpit. And we're talking about family every night. Now, I brought a visitor with me. Did you do the same? My father-in-law, Lee Holder, is with me tonight. Now, Lee is a member, a longtime member of the Jacksonville Church, and many of you know Lee. He's been my father-in-law for 32 years. I was thinking before I got up, there was only one time I can remember ever being afraid of him. And it was the night that I knew I had to ask for his daughter's hand, which I had never done before, you know. Never had asked a man that before. And he was working down in his shop. Cindy and I went, left Fried Hardeman and went and came to visit her parents. And I went down to the shop. He was building a table. He was putting the finish on it. And, oh, could I help you? He said, yeah, take a rag and rub on that. And, oh, I worked it and worked it. And I was trying to work up my courage is what I was doing. And I couldn't find it. I couldn't find the courage. And finally he said, I guess we need to go back to the house. And I thought, it's now or never. I've got to say it. I want to ask you something. And, I just had to push the words out of my mouth. I want to ask you something. What is it? I want to marry your daughter. And, he was very nice to me. You know, he didn't give me a hard time much. And we talked for a long time before he said he would be proud for us to do that. And so that the rest is history. And that was the only time I was ever afraid of him. And here's what the good book says. Psalm 127. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. That is to say that you and I do not have enough human ingenuity to build a successful home without the Lord. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Now, to understand that, of course, you have to understand God's perspective of vanity. He defines success. Everybody in this room needs to be able to define what true success is without flinching. You ought to be able to do it in your sleep. True success is living your life and going to heaven. No matter what else might be true, that is the ultimate truth for every man and every woman. True success is living your life and going to heaven. And the best way for people to grow up and love the Lord and go to heaven is to have a house that God built. And except the Lord build the house, the labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman wakes but in vain. It is vain. But see if this doesn't describe a lot of people, you know. I hope it doesn't describe you or me. It is vain for they to rise up early and stay up late to eat the bread of sorrows. For so he gives his beloved sleep. In other words, there's a peace attached to being in Christ. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is that man who has his quiver full of them. They should not be ashamed. That is to say, those children raised in a house that the Lord built, they're not ashamed when they speak with the enemies in the gate because they know who they are. They know whose they are, you see. I want to make an acrostic tonight of the word family. I want to make a point. I'm going to make a word from each of the letters in the word family. I heard the story one time of a town that had, like most towns, a city garbage dump. And for years, that thing existed out there, and people would haul their trash out, and they'd burn it sometimes. They had some bulldozers, and they'd bury all that. And it got to be a rather large hill, and before long, something else happened. The town grew, and they started building houses and businesses all around that. And so that was kind of the center of the town, and it was rather an eyesore. And so they planted grass. They just had garbage hill there in the middle of the town. Well, some years passed by, and people rather forgot what that big hill was about. And some developers came in and bought it from the city fathers for a song, and they built some neighborhoods up on Garbage Hill. They didn't call it that anymore. And young families came in. They feathered their nests, built their houses, moved in on that hill. But before long, something strange started happening. The foundations at the corners of those houses began to crack. And some of those bedrooms, if you walked in and looked at the corners, they were separating. Now, those young families couldn't figure out what was happening to their homes. But of course, the old-timers, now the old-timers knew what was going on. You see, you can't build a house on garbage and expect things to stay together well. We're going to talk about raising kids tonight, talking about tending the children. We start with the letter F. We've got to tend their faith. So in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 8, the Bible says, Paul says, "Now, Timothy, when I look at you, I see an unfeigned faith." That means it's the real McCoy. It's unadulterated. "I see the unfeigned faith that's in you, but I've seen it before. I saw it in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I'm persuaded it's in you also." How do you like that? Faith is a transferable commodity. Now, if your children grow up with a strong faith, and I pray to God that they will, it won't be an accident. You don't catch faith like you catch a cold. You don't just get it by osmosis. It's because we trained it, because we put that in those children. Now listen to me. I'm an advocate of Bible classes. The Bible school program is a very important part of my life, has been for, I reckon, all of my life. I work in it and I support it. But parents, listen to me. Growing up in the church, there were years when we had really strong Bible classes. And, well, then growing up, there were some years that were sort of weak. And I've had a lot of variables involved in that. Sometimes you had teachers who were stronger Christians or more knowledgeable about the Bible. And sometimes you just had a youth group that was more interested and then sometimes less interested. I don't know. Many variables. But what you turn out with is that some years are better than others with reference to the Bible school program. I want you to be a strong advocate of the Bible school program. But if your children are still at home with you, don't you depend on the Bible school program to put faith in your kids. That's your responsibility. What happens with the Bible school program is on top of that. That's in addition to that. It's not what you depend on, because the responsibility for their spiritual upbringing belongs to you. So, what are you doing about that? You know what? We need to pray in our home. I've known children that got to be 8 years old and didn't know how to pray. That's an adult problem there. We have kids at West Huntsville right now who can say all the books of the Bible, and they've just barely gotten to 3 years old. Now, that's no accident. That's because of drilling and teaching and nurturing. I'm telling you, if our children don't grow up knowing and loving the Lord, it's because we hadn't put it in them. Now, I know there are outside influences that will have a bearing on their lives in many different ways. But what I'm saying is, we'd better do our part. We'd better get busy. What are we doing to put faith in the hearts of our children? May I make some suggestions? Be sure you pray in your home. Be sure you never sit down at the table without talking to God and thanking Him for that food. God, in His providential care, takes care of us in such a marvelous way. And our children need to know who to thank for the blessings they have. What about this? I think that every night, families ought to have a family Bible time. Now, you can call it whatever you want. We always called it story time. I think that Daddy ought to lead this. And we're going to talk about that some more as the week goes on and about male leadership in the home. But here's what I want to suggest. Dad, what if you took a legal pad of paper? All right, you can use your computer if you want to. And you start this list. Things I want my children to know before they grow up and leave my home. Now, what kind of things would you put on that list? Things that I want them to know that they know that they know. What kind of things would you have on the list? You'd want them to know about the one true church that's taught about in the New Testament. You'd want them to know about salvation, of course, that they could talk about the plan of salvation just easily because they were so familiar with it, right? You'd want them to know about property rights and that you ought to respect the property of other people and what that means, that you don't steal from somebody. Even if you had a chance to do it and nobody would know about it, you wouldn't do it. Because God's involved in that. And you respect people. You want to teach them manners. You want to teach them about marriage and divorce and remarriage. You reckon that's important? You need to teach a boy how to grow up and be a good husband. A girl, how to be a good wife. You reckon that's important? All right, look. What if you made this list? And it's a living document. You could add to the list. But what if at night, Daddy, you said to your family, it's time for story time. And what if you just get them together in the den there or the kitchen or everybody climbs up on the big bed and you all have that story time and you say, now tonight we're going to talk about honesty. And here's what I've been thinking. And then you talk to them about what is right and wrong. You know what? About honesty. So you know, I think sometimes that we just rather take it for granted that they know these things. They're bound to know these things. I have this philosophy that if you tell a child a thing 1,000 times, he'll never be able to forget it. Even if he wanted to forget it, he can't forget it. Repetition, repetition, repetition. That's how you teach children, right? And so what if we do that next night? Tonight we're going to talk about how to be a good husband. And here are some things very important if you want to be a good husband. And I love your mama so much and I want to be a good husband to her. Let's go over to Ephesians 5 and we're going to read this and I'm going to tell you what it means. I think to hear the truths of God from the mouth of your daddy is very important. He's the spiritual leader of that family. I'm not saying it's not good for mama too, but oh God, help us to have more dependable and good Christian fathers who will lead their homes. All right, what if we did this? What if you adopt a family missionary? It's one of the things that I think is a terrific idea. You can contact a preacher or an eldership and say, I'm looking for a faithful missionary wherever. Where you got one? Well, we know one in Ukraine, or we know one over in Colombia, South America, or Argentina, or China, or Zimbabwe, or Zambia. Great. And start writing him letters. What if your family starts writing? Let your children write letters. If they're not old enough to write yet, why, let them dictate what they want to say, what they want to ask the missionary. Let them ask their childish questions. What do you wear there? What kind of food do you eat? What do the children look like there? You know, whatever they want to ask. And put a little money in there. Make this your family missionary. And let your children, don't give them extra, let them take some out of their allowance and add to that and send that off. And you know what? That missionary is going to he'll just delight in that. And he'll sit down and write you a letter back and he'll answer all those questions that your children asked. And he'll thank you for the money. And he'll tell you about people who have just been baptized into Christ. And you know what? You listen to me. Your children are going to be happy about that. And do you know why? Because part of their allowance went to that. See, that he's their missionary, you see. They have some ownership involved in that. What are you doing? I'm putting faith in my children. I reckon it's the most important thing I'll ever do as a father. I've got to put faith in them. It won't matter that my children grow up and are financially prosperous. It won't matter that they're politically strong or that they're connected or they have a big house or have a great and lucrative position, whatever. It doesn't matter. If my children grow up and they don't love the Lord, they're failures. Do you hear what I'm saying? Because the only ultimate and real definition of success is living your life and going to heaven. If you live your life and you don't go to heaven, it's a failure. No matter what else is true, there is no close second to this definition of true success. Right? All right, that's the F. We've got to train their faith. And here's number two. We're talking about the word family. Let's use the word A now. We've got to tend their actions. Their actions. So you're familiar with Ephesians chapter 6. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, beginning in verse 1. Bring them up in the nurture and the admonition. And to nurture them means to feed them and to guide them. And admonition means to discipline them. We're curbing their passions and training their minds. Raise them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Now, there's a great big division in our country right now about corporal punishment. And there's a good number of people who believe that all corporal punishment is child abuse. You good with that? You know what? That's a lie from the devil. I'm opposed to child abuse, but spanking delivered in appropriate measures at appropriate times by loving parents, that's from heaven. That's from heaven. Now, Cindy and I went to school with some wonderful people, still good friends after all these years, but we had completely different parenting philosophies. I'm not setting myself up or us up as perfect parents. We certainly aren't. We made a lot of mistakes. But anyway, the philosophy was different. Their philosophy about the word no was that you should save your no's for the big things, right? You don't want to waste them, because if you just use the word no often, what will happen is that it loses its punch. And so what you do is you wait till they do something really bad, and then you use the word no, and, you know, it'll really have an effect. That's a recipe for disaster, right? The opposite is true. What it is you use the word no. One of the greatest things you can do with a child is use the word no. Show him how much you love him and build those boundaries. Now, discipline. Discipline is most effective in homes where there's a lot of affection, a lot of love, where love is often expressed. You know, you don't want to exert discipline minus affection. They need to go hand in hand. A child needs to know how much he is loved. And furthermore, discipline by loving parents is another expression of that love, right? Now, let's talk about that for a minute. When do you suppose it's right to spank a child? When is it appropriate? I suppose it's not appropriate the first time you tell him to do something, right? What you do is you save those spankings for violations, knowledgeable violations of your will. That is to say, I've taught the child, my child, what is right. He chooses or made a choice to do something contrary to that. And that's when spanking is appropriate. All right? I have a good friend who was in my office one day, and he had a little child. I guess she was about maybe 4 years old. And she was over there looking at my books. And she wasn't hurting them, so it didn't bother me. It didn't bother me. But it bothered him. He was nervous about her tearing something, I guess. And so he said, honey, don't touch the books. Leave the books alone. And so we continued our conversation. And so directly I looked over there and he looked and she was still doing it. She ignored him like she was deaf. And she wasn't deaf. And he said, I told you to stop bothering the books. And if you don't stop bothering the books, I'm going to come over there and spank you. We continued our conversation, and she continued looking and touching the books. I mean, like he didn't exist, which was very strange to me. And furthermore, while I pretended to listen to him, the conversation was hard for me because I knew something was about to happen. And so he, you know what? So she turns and he looks and he realizes she's still doing what he just told her not to do. And he said that he would spank her. And so, you know what he did? He walked right over there and picked her up into his arms and walked over, and we continued our conversation. That was it. I want to ask you a question. Who won? Now, wait a minute. No, you wait. You should wait. I know what you're thinking. See, we know Daddy didn't win. But would you listen to this old preacher? She didn't win either. It's not about books. It's about a very important lesson that he messed up on. Never lie to a child. Never lie. If you promise that child that if you continue this behavior, I will spank you, then unless there are mitigating circumstances that you learn that change the whole thing, you be sure you fulfill that promise. Otherwise, the next time you say it, it won't matter because that child already knows you're a liar. That girl knew. She didn't obey her daddy. You know what? Because he said this kind of thing before and he doesn't follow through. He lies to her. Right? Now a better thing, you know, sometimes children are going to run. Little children, you know, I'm sure I did it. And you say, honey, come here, come over here. And they'll turn and look at you and they'll run the other way. Right? Well, I'm sure I did it. I'm sure my children did it. But what has to happen? That's a learning, teaching moment. And what you do is that you chase him till you catch him. Now, your legs are longer. Surely you can do that. And you catch him and you dust his britches real good. And you know what? I'm opposed to child abuse. Child abuse is evil and it's from hell, isn't it? Physical, sexual, emotional, all kinds of child abuse are just wrong. We're not talking about that. In fact, the kind of circumstance I'm describing, he's probably wearing a diaper that's 3 inches thick, you know, and you're not doing him any harm. Now, he's going to holler like you really hurt him, but you haven't. And anyway, you chase him and you catch him and you dust his britches. And then you say, when I tell you that I want you to come, you come then. Incidentally, he may one time be going towards something that will endanger his life. And whether he lives or dies may hinge on whether or not he's learned how to obey you. But even if that never happens, a teaching opportunity, because you're not always going to be right there in his life. He's going to grow up one day and he's got to learn sometime to obey the Almighty God. And where will he learn this authority if he doesn't learn it from you? Right? dust his britches. And then you walk back and you say, now, hey, let's practice this. When I call you, I want you to come. You stand there and I'll stand over here. Let's try it again. Come here. I want you to come here. And let him try it. Now, if he doesn't figure it out then, will you go back and dust his britches again, right? Look, you'll win. And the important thing is, and I think this is so important, in parenting children, you must not lose a battle of the wills. Don't lose a battle of the wills. You must always win a battle of the wills. And now, your children, like my children and like you and me, when we were children, are going to test you and see whose will is stronger. So, you know, you look over and your child is playing with a lamp. And you say, honey, don't touch that lamp. And you know what he's going to do? There'll be a day. He's going to look at you and he'll go like this. You know what he's doing? He's testing you. He's going to see if your will is bigger or his will is bigger. Who can win? And he's ready for the test, right? Now, I want you to make sure he heard you. You know that we're talking about no ambiguity here. He heard what you said and he just decided to test the wills. That's what he's doing. And then you go over there and you say, you heard me say, don't touch the lamp. And you did what I said not to do. He dusts his britches. And then you say, now let's practice. And you stand over here and you say, don't touch the lamp. And let's see if he wants to touch it again. Right? Let's see if he wants to touch it. And what you're doing is training him to understand the system, the principle, the concept of authority. Because you love him. Because you love him. We've got to tend their acts. You ever go to Walmart and there are children that are running absolutely crazy and nobody owns them? Right? We're not going to do that. We're not going to ignore our children. We're not going to lie to our children. We're not going to scream at our children. Don't scream at your children. I don't mean if they're crawling about to cross a major interstate and a semi is coming. That's not what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. You be sure that when you're disciplining your children that you maintain control. You're a grown-up. Act like a grown-up. I know sometimes you get angry. Don't show it. You just maintain that. You're the grown-up. Discipline that child because it's right, not because you're mad. And don't scream at a child. I don't want your children to obey you because you're scary. They need to obey you because you're mama or because you're daddy. See, that's the difference. M. Let's let the M represent the word morals. Morals. 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 6 says that love does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. That's how our houses need to be. Now, what are we doing about the morals? Let me tell you something. We live in a country, in a world right now, that's gone absolutely amoral. I mean, crazy. With reference to morals. And if you don't guard your home, I'm telling you the devil has a wide array of methods to make sure your children become immoral. What are you doing? Well, I better guard the media. I better make sure that I guard the media. I think that hell shoots off fireworks every night because of cable television. Don't you suppose? I've got to guard the television. The fact of the matter is that we've got to have rules in our house about what we will and won't watch. And you know what? We're not going to violate this. And what will happen, of course, is that your children will learn that our rule is if they start talking like this on that show, we either turn it off or we change the channel. And by the way, it's got to be every time. If you get it, Daddy, you get involved in some sort of a shoot-em-up show and they start doing what you have prohibited, you've got to follow the rules. You think, man, I'm really in it. It's a great plot. I can't believe I'm going to have to change it. You better change it because your children are going to do more by your actions than by your words, right? If they do this sexually, we're going to turn it off or we're going to change the channel. You've got to set up the rules. You've got to make the rules and then abide by. The same about the radio. Do you know what your children listen to? You know, most CDs now have a little card there in the box and you can read lyrics. Do you know what your kids are listening to? If you don't, you better figure it out. A lot of stuff out there is just pure D garbage. And the devil's working his way to get into their hearts. And you've got to make sure that you're the grown-ups. Be the parents and guide. and make sure that what's going on with the media isn't offensive to God. I bought those televisions or those stereos or those DVD players. I bought them, and if I can't control them, I know how to get rid of them. Right? We don't have to be entertained. The Bible doesn't command us to be entertained. Now, there's nothing wrong with some recreation. I understand that, but I'm telling you what, if we can't control it without it being wicked, then we'd be a lot better off not having the entertainment at all. And that's the philosophy that we've got to have. Now, as your children grow and they get toward the dating years, don't you suppose that we need to be the parents about this and guide them in a way that will protect them from the pitfalls that the devil has laid for them out there? And so we're going to set the age at which our children can start dating. Maybe a lot of parents, you know, do a gradual thing. You can group date until this age, and then before long at this point you can do this. And I think it's fine for you to set up the rules. I think that's a good idea. But when you do that, be sure that you also make the don't go there's. There have to be don't go there's. That is to say, lines that we draw and things that we're not going to do. It has to be, for example, in reference to immodest apparel. Right? It's insane to me to think that we're going to train up our children to avoid sexual promiscuousness or promiscuity, and then we're going to let our girls go out with short shorts or with low-cut things or clothes, blue jeans that are spray-painted on. What are we thinking? So what we're going to do is that we're going to set up some morals in reference to dress. Now, I had a daddy come to me the other day, and he said, Christian home. He said, you know, I have two teenage daughters, and they're beautiful girls. And he said, but we always have this issue about clothing and about what is appropriate or inappropriate clothing. And where is the biblical line? I know about 1 Timothy chapter 2, and I know that it says immodest apparel, but where's the line? And I said, Daddy, you are the line. Now see, it's perfect. He's perfect to be the line. First of all, he's the head of the family. But in the second place, he's a man. Let me tell you something. The women don't understand it. The women will never understand it. But a man understands it. Daddy understands it. Right? And he's in that position. And so he's the one who has to make the decision to say, "That's you know what, when Hannah married this past summer, so she's, before long, it'll be a year. I can't believe it. Married a wonderful man, and I just really love him. But before she married, and even you know, when she would be home from college, she would buy some new outfit, you know, and she'd come in. I'd be sitting at the kitchen table, and she'd say, Daddy, is this okay? And I'd say, you know what that means. And sometimes she would do it this way. And I was like, no. This slow, turn around slowly. And you know what? I'm the one. And I'd say, yeah, I think that's fine. Looks nice, very nice. Or I would say, no, you. But Daddy, I just bought this. I'm sorry. You can take it back. Whatever. That's irrelevant to me. What it is you can't wear that out because I don't think it's modest. We're just not going to do that. We're not going to go there. Let's create the don't go there for dating. And some rules. I think, what about rules? And it's not because you're opposed to them having these kinds of elementary relationships with the opposite sex. I think that's a good thing. And we're building and we're doing some good things, but we do it with safeguards. So rules, for example, would be you don't go into your boyfriend's house alone. The two of you can't go into any house alone. Oh, come on. What if he left his car keys in the house? And then we're just going to go in there for a minute and get him. No, that would violate the rule. Can't go in there alone. You can't go in your boyfriend or girlfriend's bedroom and close the door. Oh, yeah, but why? We got all of our parents are there. Lots of adults there. Fine, leave the door open. Don't you trust me? Of course I trust you. It's not about trusting you. It's just the rule. I love you and I'm helping you. And someday you'll understand. But you can't close the door. If you're with your boyfriend or girlfriend, you can't go in the bedroom and close the door. Ever. Right? Areas of the body that aren't for looking, aren't for touching. Okay. You know, we don't need to go mixed swimming. I know I catch trouble on this one. But the fact of the matter is that the boys don't need to see the girls without their clothes on. Right? It's foolishness for we parents to fuss about fornication. And don't you have sex before you get married. And then we put these temptations. The dancers are the worst. Are you kidding me? So what we're going to do, I remember when I was 17, it hasn't been very long, and you know, you have this girlfriend and she's driving you crazy. She drives you crazy. And you know what I mean? And then we go to the dances. And so we dim the lights and we play music and she moves her body to the beat of music in front of me, and that's benign. Right. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Are we crazy? And then, you know, the prom dresses. So we do this immodest thing, and she looks like, well, you know what? You know, it's cheap. And we say, yeah, but you're only going to be a senior once. That's right. You're only going to be a senior once. And I'm saying these things because I don't want you to create memories that you're going to regret the rest of your life. I want you to have the best. You know, when God says, thou shalt not, He's not trying to hurt you. He's trying to help you. He's trying to say, don't hurt yourself. When He says, thou shalt, He's trying to say, let me show you how to be happy in life. Let me show you how to have the best life. Can you listen to this old preacher? Let me tell you what God's best is. When my son was a teenager, he went to work for a little newspaper in Collierville, Tennessee. Collierville is a suburb of Memphis. And Memphis has this big newspaper, the Sentinel or the Commercial Appeal. Big, big newspaper. Collierville had this little bitty newspaper. And they did local things. And Caleb was in high school. We're homeschoolers. And so he could manipulate his schedule. And so he went to the editor and said, I'd like to write high school sports. And I'll work for you for a couple of weeks for nothing. You can just see if you like what I do. Well, he did. And so he hires him on. Well, so Caleb's writing these sports, and we'll go, you know, to these ball games, high school sports. He knows the coaches, and it was just a lot of fun, a great little job. Well, one day Caleb said to the editor, why don't we do the Grizzlies? Why don't we do professional basketball? Would you let me report on professional basketball? Man, well, you know, the Commercial Appeal does that, and I suppose we could get press passes, but you'd need a photographer, and I can't afford to furnish you a photographer. Caleb said, I think I could get one. Was me. And so we went. We'd go to those professional basketball games, and he would write those stories. And I've been kicked by Shaq. I didn't kick him back. He didn't mean to kick me. He was, you know, we were out sitting on the side of the court, big game, you know, and he came right past me after a ball. But we'd go in the locker rooms. Here's where I'm going with this. We'd go in the locker rooms and be around those guys that are making millions and millions of dollars. They are it. Kobe was there. Michael was there. Big, they're making tons of money. And some of them were clean cut, and they were living lives that seemed decent. But then you had some of them that were players, and I'm not talking about on the court. And they had women. Everywhere they would go, they had lots of women. I've been married 32 years. And let me tell you something. I wouldn't trade places with any of them. Now, they think what they've got is happiness. I'm telling you, that's not what it is. There's misery at the end of that road. There's lots of misery. But at the end of my road, there's happiness and joy and not guilt. Do you hear what I'm saying? We've got to tend their morals. And what that means is we love them enough to make rules, and then we stand by them. And we explain them, but we stand by them. And sometimes they're not going to understand them, but we stand by them. These are the rules. We've got to tend their icons. Let's let I represent icons. So sometimes our kids, you know, they're rather mesmerized by the movie stars of the day or the rock stars of the day or this star or that star, and wanting to emulate them in the way that they dress, or maybe in their bedrooms, you know, posters and things. To sometimes, and I know this wouldn't be true about any kids in this room, but in some cases, teenagers idolize people that came from hell. I mean, that make hell celebrate with their wickedness. They're just so wicked. And sometimes teenagers just think that's so cool, and they'll emulate that. And so the question comes to me like this. Well, now, Brother Colley, my teenager has all sorts of that stuff in his room, and all those different stars, rock stars, all that drug garbage, sex garbage, you know, but I don't know what I can do. I mean, don't you think that that's his room and that he ought to have some privacy and I ought to let him do, because that's his room, you know. I've never subscribed to that mentality. I never have. And, you know, I really love my kids. I've told them many times in their lives, I love you enough to die for you without flinching. I do. I still do. But Joshua 24 and 15 says this, "But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Right? I want them to know that no matter where they go in this world, my house is where Jesus lives. You hear me? I don't know what's going to happen in their lives. I don't know where they're going to go or how things are going to go. But I want them to know that in all the world, there's at least one place that they can always count on where Jesus lives. And that's my daddy's house. That's my daddy's house. Jesus will always live there. And incidentally, I would suggest this philosophy about your children. I own you. I own your ears and your nose and your mouth and your feet. There isn't anything that appertains to you that I don't own. You belong to me, every bit of you. And about your room. Now, I think that children growing up, they need to have some privacy. I can respect that. But I don't think that we should. I never let my kids lock their door. You know, the door, I'm going to respect it. But if I want to come in, I need to be able to come in. Right? Now, the truth is that in the real world, I'm going to knock before I come in. I'm going to knock and show them that respect and that kindness. But there's just something about them knowing that if I ever did want to come in, I have that liberty because I'm daddy. Right? And that chest of drawers belongs to me. And sometimes a parent will say, I'm afraid that my child is using drugs. But I think about, you know, when my son is not at home, maybe I would go through the dresser, his dresser, but I don't feel like I should do that because isn't that his? And that's his private place and that's his stuff. And I don't think I should. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? He belongs to you. His furniture belongs to you. The underwear and the dresser belongs. Everything belongs to you because he's yours. He's your responsibility, right? And you're raising him up. Go to the dresser. Go through the dresser. Look under the dresser. Look behind the dresser. If you think he's into some trouble, you better find it out and then take whatever measures you need to try to correct it and help him. Right? All right. L. We've got to tend their loyalties. Their loyalties. We need to build loyalty to the Lord in our children. Because one day, they're going to grow up and leave us. They've got to have a backbone about the Lord. You don't, there's nobody in this room. Here it is, Tuesday night, and we're having a meeting, and here you are in this room. And some of you have your kids with you. Praise God. You didn't come here tonight because it was convenient. You came here because you care about the things of God. I know that about everybody in this room. I'm so thankful for you. It's because you have a conviction about this. It's where you wanted to be, and that's why you came. Unless, of course, you're a kid and your mom made you. Okay, I understand. That's okay. That's okay. How do you put backbone, spiritual backbone in your kids? Because see, that's the goal, isn't it? I mean, you know, they're going to grow up and you're not going to be there to say, we got to go to church now. They've got to decide that. You're not going to be there to say, you need to pray to God every day and reveal to Him the contents of your heart. You're not going to be there to say, let's have story time. It's time because I'm going to teach you about this and this. You're not going to be there. You're not. And the objective is that they're going to grow up to the point where they will have the stamina to do the right thing, right? But it's going to take courage, and it's going to take a backbone. And too many parents today have a cloth string where they ought to have a backbone. You got to have a backbone to teach backbone. And backbone is that we're going to put the work of the Lord first, right? Now, listen to this old preacher, because you may not agree with me if you don't listen closely. I think that it's a blessing as the kids are growing up when there are challenges to Wednesday night Bible study. That is to say, important things pop up instead of that conflict with Wednesday evening Bible study or gospel meetings or the like. Sunday evening assembly, something comes up. You see, I'm in favor of sports. I'm in favor of kids playing sports. I think it's healthy and it grows lots of different things, physically and emotionally. And I think it's good when you have an occasion where a ball game Maybe it's a playoff. It's scheduled on a Wednesday night. Now, parents, I think what you ought to do is go to the coach first of the season and say to him, I'm going to be a good parent to help you any way that I can. I'll bring the Gatorade. I'll be at practices. Whatever you need me for. You want me to haul kids, I'm going to help you. Now, we're Christians, and on Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock, whatever time you all meet, we have a Bible study. It lasts an hour. So if you schedule a practice, I'm going to come and get my boy or my girl, and we'll be gone for that hour. I'll bring them back quick. And if it's a game on that Wednesday night, I won't feel bad about you if you don't play them. If you feel like that this hour is going to mess that up, whatever, if it messes up your groove, that's fine. If you don't want to play them, I won't fuss at you. I just want to be fair with you. I think you should be fair with coaches or with band directors or with whatever your kids are involved in. Be fair with the leadership. But then when it comes that tough time, put the Lord first. Or you say, well, now we don't miss prayer meeting. We don't miss Bible study. We don't miss church. We don't do that for school unless there's a big test. We don't miss for sports unless there's a big game. Right? We don't miss because we're tired unless we're really tired. May I ask you a question? When your son or daughter grows up, how often do you think, I mean, it's not going to be about Little League ball. I understand that because they're going to be long past that. How often do you think something big is going to come up? How often do you think they're going to be really tired? If you're hard of it, man, we did a lot of all-night things. I mean, it was 5 years before I wasn't tired. You're going to be tired, sometimes really tired. How often will work be so exhausting that when it comes time for worship, you know, you just are tempted to stay at home? You know what? I may be building a road for my children's apostasy and don't even realize it. Let's do the opposite. In our home, the Lord always comes first, no matter what. We always put the Lord first. And you have to do that in very practical ways that are sometimes challenging and sometimes difficult. And this business about, well, you know, I don't want my kids to feel like I'm cramming religion down their throat. I think that's a wrong thing. Are you kidding me? What? Come on now. You don't believe that about brushing teeth, do you? You don't? Well, I don't like to brush my teeth. You know what? I never like to take a bath. I really didn't like, you know what? Don't like to take a bath. Getting muddy, that's fun. Bath, not fun. And so you say, well, I don't want to cram this down your throat, right? This cleanliness thing. Are you kidding? Get in the tub, right? Get in the tub. I'm getting there now. Don't mess with me, right? That's what you say. Why is that? Because that child's your responsibility. And cleanliness, that's important. It's important. Brushing teeth, proper hygiene, that's important. You and I'd better apply that same logic with their spiritual well-being. Because I'm telling you something. That spiritual education is many times more important than their secular education. Right? Because one of them has to do with eternal life and the other with something that's fleeting and ain't going to last very long. And now the why. My time is almost gone. We got to do this while they're young. Let the why represent young. There are many things that I really love about my work. And there's some things that are very difficult, and I'm sure that's true about most kinds of works. I got a call one day when I was living in Collierville from the funeral director, one of the funeral directors in town. And I've always felt like that it's a good thing for gospel preachers to conduct funerals, even if they don't know anybody in the family, if they're invited to do so, because you never know when a door might open up to teach somebody the gospel. And I've always viewed that as sort of an opportunity. And anyway, the phone rang and the funeral director said that a teenager had been killed and said the mama of the boy used to be a member of the Church of Christ. And she asked if he could get a Church of Christ preacher to come and conduct this service. And would you do it? Yes, I will. And so I went. And then the funeral was packed with kids. The chapel was larger than this auditorium, and not only was it packed in the pews, but they were lined up, teenagers, all around the walls. And all back in the lobby was just packed with kids. I mean, there was barely room for me to get up to the podium to speak. And kids are naturally very demonstrative of their emotions. And so it was a very difficult circumstance because of this. Mason was 19 years old, maybe 18. And he liked drugs, and he liked to drink, and he liked to party late into the night. And in this particular night, his friends were out in the country, and they were drag racing. It's about 2 o'clock in the morning. He was not sober. He lost control of the car, and the front of that car made a sudden impact with an oak tree. And his foolish, drunken, sorry friends held him out there in the grass until he died. That's what happened. And now, just a moment later, so it seemed, we were then at that funeral chapel. I talked to them about the Lord. I talked to them about living right. Stay away from drugs. Stay away from alcohol. Love the Lord. This is the way to live. Love the Lord. Went out to the cemetery. And you know, we had lots of people. And you had the pallbearers, and it was almost time to begin. There was loud music being played on the car radios, and I knew I wasn't going to conduct that solemn service with those radios, but they turned it off. It was time to start, just about time to begin. I was waiting for the nod from the funeral director, and this hopped-up Mustang, loud Mustang, roared past that cemetery. And I thought, you know what? If he had any idea of what we were doing, he wouldn't have done that. And then one of those boys standing next to me said, he's one of the pallbearers. This was his tribute to Mason. That was the atmosphere. I conducted the service. We finished. And then we began milling about. And two different mothers walked up to me, not aware of the other, but coincidentally said the same thing. Brother Colley, you don't know me, but do you see that boy over there or that girl over there? Yes, ma'am. That's my child. And I'm really very afraid, you see, because my teenager is doing the same thing that Mason was doing. And I don't know what to do. I'm so scared. Well, are you a Christian? Well, yeah. I guess I was. You know what? I used to be a member of the church, but you know, I hadn't been in years. I just got so busy with work and with whatever and with life, and I hadn't been to worship in a long, long time. Well, I tell you what I want you to do. I want you to, after this is over, you go home with your teenager and you sit down in a quiet place and you say, I am so very sorry. Being at Mason's funeral today made me realize what I've done to you. I've let you down. Because I hadn't been right with the Lord and I haven't guided you to be right with the Lord. And this Sunday, I'm going to be back meeting with the church and I'm going to be restored. I'm going to make my life right. And then I said, you beg her to come with you. Beg her to come with you. Beg him to come with you. Now, I do not know if that would work. I just don't know what else you could do. Incidentally, those kids had a party planned for that night. There was more heartache yet to come. There were more pillows that were going to be stained with tears before this thing had run its course. We need to start young. And you know what? If you're sitting in this room and you're thinking, my children are grown and I wish I had known these things way back when, this is not, none of this is to put salt in your wound. You know what? We do the best we can with the knowledge that we have at the time, and that's all that we can do. I'm talking to those of you who have children or grandchildren who are still young and impressionable. We got to start young. We got to start when they're young. That's when the clay is pliable and we can make a difference, a real difference in their lives. You've been very kind to listen. One more thing. You can't have a Christian home if you're not a Christian. It doesn't make any difference how much you talk about wanting your kids to grow up to be Christians. If you won't be one, your example will speak louder than your words. Are you a child of God according to the New Testament? If the answer is no, why not become a Christian tonight? Now would be a great time. Because you need to go to heaven. You can't go to heaven except through Jesus Christ. The cross of Jesus Christ was not a compromise with the world. It was an ultimatum, right? Repent of your sins and confess Jesus and be baptized tonight. In response to the one who said, He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. And do that for your kids, the people who mean the most on this earth to you, so that you can influence them for good. Or it may be there's somebody here who needs to be restored to say, you know what, I haven't been the right kind of example in front of my kids or my grandkids or other people's kids. And I need to make that right and get started back right again. And God will forgive you and we'll pray with you and for you, and you can do just that. We're going to sing a song of encouragement. If you'd like to respond, come as we stand and sing.